Hi there, everyone. Carl Massive here, coach, strategist, and author of a few books. Welcome to the Life Masterclass podcast series and my monthly episode where I do conversations with Carl, and I'm going to very shortly introduce this beautiful lady that's over to the other side of the screen there, Sharon. One of the things we want to do with this conversation is, and this is the Life Masterclass, is all about keeping things extremely practical. And the aim of this conversation, we're going to talk about a few specific modalities, and we'll talk about how Sharon and I crossed and some of the modalities. And when I say modalities, I mean sort of techniques, tools, strategies, particularly for the inner work. So I'm so much about health, physical health, mental health, even the psychological, spiritual health. So we sort of, you know, weave our way around that. So let me briefly introduce Sharon. So I met Sharon in Bali. I was running a workshop there. Her and her partner John came along to the workshop, so I got to meet her through that. And then Sharon's been sort of back and forth from the States and different places around the world to Bali. So I've maintained a relationship over time. And Sharon's got similar sort of background to me. She sort of did her corporate piece working with Microsoft and then sort of went through some major changes, decided to do the travelling thing, take a step back, get a little bit clear about it, and then be drawn into the thing that's, you know, pulling her along. Same thing that pulled me, which is my love and desire to help people, work with people and help people figure stuff out. As I did my own thing of figuring stuff out, I'm like, if I can figure this stuff out, then I can share it with other people. So Sharon's followed a similar path, so she's in this coaching space. And again, you know, we've crossed over paths because of obviously having met, but one of the modalities we'll talk about is meditation, and in particular Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. So I've done 2-week-long retreats of his, one in Australia and one in Berlin. A couple of years ago, you know, last couple of years has limited my travelling ability, so I haven't done any recently, but Sharon recently did one of his 7-day workshops. So I'm actually fascinated to hear, you know, what might have been reintroduced or introduced over the last few years. So Sharon, thank you so much for joining me. Just give a little bit of background. I sort of spoke a little bit of pieces there. Maybe talk about some of the transition points and experience points as points for you. So thank you, and mic's all yours.
Well, thank you, Carl. Nice introduction. I appreciate that. And I'm really excited to have this time with you too, because we have been talking about catching up for a little while, and this is a wonderful way of doing it. And I'm excited to hear about the things you've recently been learning and experimenting with. So yeah, where to start, how to boil this down. I am currently in Florida on vacation. When we made this plan, I was at my home in Colorado, but decided to come down here and play a little golf in the middle of ski season and get warm. And that's a good theme for my life. Since leaving the corporate world 8 years ago, I've been doing a lot of traveling and optimizing for enjoyment of life and how to feel alive and be a curious participant in life. And that's led me down a lot of different paths. 2 years ago, I fell in love with the game of golf, and I've been immersing myself in learning that and learning a lot about myself as I go. And 8 years ago, I started dedicating my winters to becoming really good at skiing. And the work, the inner work part and the coaching work part falls into that as well. Like, I just love learning from different teachers that I find have come across something that I could immerse myself in. And so that's why the work Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe, resonates with me, as well as some other teachers. So 8 years ago was my transition point leaving corporate. I was in a marriage for 7 years, and that came to an end around the same time. And so I found myself in this place naturally where I could reassess the direction of my life. I had worked really hard all through school, getting a degree in computer engineering. I had been very much by the book of society of how you live life and be successful. And I was doing pretty well at that. And I had this point in my life where I could sit there and go, there's something more. I've always had this sense that there's something more. And I just kept working harder and harder up the ladder, you know, the societal ladder of life. And I was blessed with this opportunity as life as I knew it was falling down around me. And I got to leave that and go just take a chance. I figured I could always go back to the corporate world. I had so many nice contacts. And luckily, I took the leap and I left my job. I left my apartment. I got on planes and I went places that I'd never been before by myself. And that led me to yoga and Vipassana meditation. And that's just been the last 8 years, meeting the next person and the next teacher. And here I am. So we can get more into more specifics of some of those adventures and some of those teachings.
Classic. And to borrow some of Joe Dispenza terminology, so Joe Dispenza talks about removing ourselves from the known and familiar. So one of the things, and I did the same thing, I took a year's travel leave without pay from the military, and I reckon one of my biggest growth moments, because I left the known and familiar of the social template, of the organisation, of the institution I worked at, of my familial and family environment, beliefs from mother, father, like all of that stuff. And we leave that, and we travel, and this is why I love travel, I love sabbaticals and that sort of stuff. And we drop into, you know, this relationship with ourselves, and we start asking, what do I actually believe in, which isn't, you know, fed to me or reflected at me from the environment that I was sort of embedded within. So I sort of go on these things, and I, you know, you're exploring those places, whether it's Tikal ruins in Guatemala or somewhere else in South America or South Africa or wherever it is, and drop into, you know, what is it that I truly believe in when I'm free from that? And particularly if we've got the ability to, you know, fund ourselves through those experiences, we don't have the financial stressors as well, you know, imposing itself upon us and stopping us from being able to see more clearly. So, so I'm curious to know too, like... So Dr. Joe Dispenza, say, for people who haven't been exposed to him, you know, he's been around a bunch of years now, and he's always been interested in bringing the metaphysical and science together. And like in his workshops, he's, you know, got people hooked up to EEGs, he's measuring heart rate variabilities, you know, and some of them might be doing blood tests before and at the end. You know, he's got so much scientific data, he has neuroscientists involved in it. So someone couldn't say to him, you know, this woo-woo meditation, doing these guided meditations. Like, he's got all the facts to back it up. And, you know, he's written 4 great books, you know, Evolve Your Mind, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, You Are the Placebo, and then his latest one, Becoming Supernatural. Yeah. So all of those, which is your favourite book of those? And if you're recommending people to get their teeth into Joe, which do you send them towards?
Yeah, I often will recommend that people start with You Are the Placebo, especially if they're looking to heal a physical condition, some disease condition. I think that's a great one to start with. And then the other one I recommend is Becoming Supernatural, because I like going to the latest book. I think it's a nice, and there's a lot of compelling stories, like testimonials in that one as well. So I recommend starting there. And those two, just comes out one way or the other, depending on who I'm talking to.
Absolutely. And, you know, both myself and Sharon have had overlaps in the yoga space, and you know, the meditative practices in that, I sort of got exposed at probably 1999, so over 20 years ago. So Joe Dispenza too talks about these energy centres in yoga be called chakras. So Joe's got these 8 energy centres. He's got, you know, testing equipment where he's measuring stuff, the calibration, the alignment of these energy centres, what glands they're related to, and that's been a yogic teaching for a long time. Each of these chakras relate to different glands, relate to different themes or intentions with those. It might be the second energy center, Joe's terms, second chakra, might be more related to safety and security. And that really is, you know, and he would say words like trusting your gut. So this idea of, and, you know, as the science catches up with that, talks about, okay, we've got these microorganisms in our stomach, so the internal flora that's happening down there, is this communication happening from the stomach up to the brain, so there's this neuron activity there. So Joe Dispenza's work is, you know, is highly scientific, and I think it's really good, like that book You Are the Placebo. You know, people to read stuff in there about some of these studies that they do that, you know, just by changing someone's perception, you know, there's one study in that he talks about in there. I'm not sure whether it's Yale or Harvard or something like that, but it was looking at women that were working as cleaning rooms and that sort of stuff in hotels. And what he looked at was, you know, they were pretty active and that sort of stuff, just doing this cleaning through the day, but they had a perception that they didn't do any physical activity or they didn't exercise because they believed exercise was a particular thing. So they took metrics before and after, and they had a control group doing exactly the same thing. And what they did was they told these women, no, you're actually doing the amount of exercise the Surgeon General of America recommends for optimum health and all that sort of stuff. So they started believing that they were doing exercise when before they didn't believe they exercised because they didn't go to the gym or whatever. And again, you know, the markers that were taken at the start of this, the tests that were done at the start and end, whether there were differences, I forget the things, whether it's lower resting heart rate, whether they reduced their amount of body fat, whether they lost some weight, you know, there were certain metrics that improved just by the belief, oh, we're exercising, nothing else changed in their life. And obviously compared to the control group, they had these changes happen. The only difference between the control group and them was they were told that they were exercising. So that's just one, you know, thing in that You Are the Placebo. There's so many other examples in that. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm not sure what funky stuff happened in your Joe Dispenza one, but I was there and, you know, there's someone's like, he's like, oh, someone's just came and told me they've got their hearing back. That's the third person in the third event I've done that said, you know, their hearing's come back. There was someone that, you know, had a stroke down the left side of their body that was sort of, you know, moving around at the start of the event, and by the end they could lift their arm up almost perpendicular to their body. And science and the medical fraternity would say that it's impossible to do because, you know, once this stroke's happened, the brain's atrophied, you know, it's no longer firing and wiring to actually create that neural movement and that sort of stuff. So I saw funky stuff. Did you see any funky stuff or experience some funky stuff yourself in your most recent?
Yeah, I most recently went to Cancun retreat in December. Yeah. And that was actually my second retreat. The first one I went to was also in Cancun, and it was 3 years prior. So I took a little bit of a break and came back. It's like, oh my gosh, I could do this at least annually, if not more often. So I actually just signed up for the advanced follow-up retreat in April. So it'll be the first time I get to go to one of those. So I witnessed, well, there was one gentleman who was in a motorized wheelchair when he got there, and throughout the week during the walking meditations, witnessed him get up and take steps on the beach. And there was a, you know, crowd of about 40, 50 people that started to gather around and watch this, and a lot of tears and a lot of cheers. And he ended up being one of the people that got called on stage to tell his story. And it turned out that he had ALS and had been doing the work for quite a while, and then had taken, life came up, he had stopped doing the work, and he had quite a regression. So he was so recommitted to doing it because he knew what what it did for him, what it did for his health, what it did for his quality of life. So that was one of the most moving things. Another thing I found interesting was there's another person that was up talking about their healing of cancer. And there was a gentleman sitting four seats down and said, I have the same story. The same things happened to me. I just haven't had my blood work yet, but like, I know I'm healed. And there's several people I talked to like that. And I realized, you know, there's probably about 1500 people there. It was a pretty big event. And I'm just sitting around surrounded by geniuses. There's so many people there that have these stories. We sit down to lunch and the stories that people tell about what they've healed in their lives is incredible. And these are regular people, you know, people that I probably see every day. You know, they don't stand out as like they're, anybody can do this work is what I take away from it.
And we can have this whole conversation of just talking about Joe Dispenza's work and that sort of stuff. There's so many different directions and there's so many deeper ways to go in it, you know, whether it's sayings like change your personal reality, you change your personality, you change your personal reality. So the idea of changing your genetic destiny by changing things inside, so changing what shows up genetically and epigenetically, what genes are turned on, what genes are turned off. So again, there's some beautiful science that's, you know, catching up with that or sort of in parallel course with that. And he's always looking for taking the science even deeper, finding the right institution that wants to work with him. The only challenge is with I'm doing work like this, once you learn how to do it, it's free. And that doesn't necessarily support the model that we've seen certainly come to the surface over the last couple of years where, you know, Big Pharma wants to have research that's supported, that supports a pharmaceutical outcome. So that's, you know, one of the challenges with any of the work. And, you know, we're going to talk about other modalities, and all of these other modalities are, you know, natural healing modalities, and they fly in the face of pharmaceutical intervention. So again, trying to find support from, even trying to find them. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to find these things because, you know, Sharon used to work in, Silicon Valley sort of way. And, you know, some of these organisations, whether it's Google algorithms that, you know, steer you towards finding pharmaceutical information and steer you away from natural health and healing. And, you know, some of the people in those businesses have talked about, you know, 90 to 95% plus decrease in organic traffic that's happened over the last few years. So it's a little bit harder to find some of this information. So, you know, Joe Dispenza's doing his best to, you know, really have some rigorous science behind it. And again, science has been, has got a bit of a bad name over the last couple of years because there's, you know, there's real rigorous science and then there's this scientism. And again, that's another direction we could take this conversation. So I wanted to keep it practical. And so one of the things I want to talk about with Sharon is what different modalities. So we can definitely say Joe Dispenza. How long are you doing Joe Dispenza meditations daily? How long are those meditations? What impact and effect have you got? So we'll tidy up with the Joe and then we'll move into some other
different modalities. About a month before the treat, so and since I've been doing the meditations daily. So for about 4 months since I got back into the work regularly. And I will, if I don't have any appointments coming up, I'll sit and do one of the meditations that's an hour and 15 or an hour and a half. And if then he's got some that are 30 to 45 minutes. So if I don't have enough time in that moment, I'll do one of those. Yeah. So, and then I'll do some journaling before and or after. And so I dedicate about 2 hours a day to this work currently.
Yeah. That's a bit that scares people off is when you start talking those sorts of numbers. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh. So.
Yeah. But the reason I do it is because how I feel when I'm doing this work. And one of the questions he asked at the last retreat says, is why would you ever stop? because we get into it for a week there and feel really great. And before we leave, why would you ever stop? And I thought about it because I was into the work 3 years. Actually, you're the one that introduced me to the work, Dr. Joe. I don't remember if you remember that, but you had just come back from one of the retreats and told me your stories. And I thought, I got to get into this. Got the first book, read that one, then read the second one, and then started doing the practices on my own without his guidance. In the book, he gives you all the words for it. And so I just was memorizing them and guiding myself through it and having incredible experiences. Just the world was starting to be full of synchronicities and things just seeming to happen without me having to be the doer of life. I was just watching magical moments and coincidences show up all over the place, and then ended up manifesting, if you want to call it that, just these beautiful two homes in Bali, which was a direct result of doing these meditations. So I was just blown away about how this all turned out. And I thought, well, why did I ever stop? And I remember my answer coming to me going, because life got so good. And I, at the time, wasn't giving enough credit to the practices. Yeah. I just thought, oh, life is good. I'm in the fast lane. I'll just keep going. Yeah. And then I realized, it's this work. And so I've gotten back into it. And this time at the retreat, I had this experience of feeling the energy move a lot and a lot more. And the first time I saw other people having these energy experiences and hearing them and hearing about them, and that didn't happen for me. And this time at the retreat, I surrender more to the movement of the energy and knowing that that's my autonomic nervous system taking new instructions and healing itself. And I found that I am just in more balance, and I have a lot less fear. I just have been uncovering, noticing how much fear has been unconsciously in my life. And I feel the relief of that coming out and letting that go. And, through this work in the last 4 months, I just feel much more trusting. And that I don't have a big healing to talk about necessarily. I have some conditions that have been getting a lot better and are nearly healed due to this work. But mostly the benefit is the feeling of peace and trust and all the energy that that brings back to be able to be present and engaged and enjoy life.
Yeah. And who wouldn't want peace and trust in their life? Like, just with those two pillar pieces, like, life just gets so much more juicy. Yeah, it's interesting of, you know, time and commitment and what we're willing to do with it. And I obviously met Sharon through the yoga center that I was involved with for a number of years, the practice. And Octavio heads it up there now. He's doing an awesome job there. I'm looking forward to catching up with him soon. But his teacher, David Goulet, is just a total ledge. Like, he's in his 70s and he hasn't been sick for about 3 or 4 decades, probably sleeps about 3 or 4 hours a night. He's got the vitality of a 30-year-old. He's just such a representation of the possibility of doing the work. Now, he would do he owns a yoga center, Pyramid Yoga, in Koh Samui, I think it is, in Thailand. So he would do like maybe about 4 hours work a day, combination of breath work, meditative work, and movement. And I think he mixes his movement. It's even, whether it's a yogic, a free-flowing thing. So he would do like about 4 hours work a day to get that benefit. So, you know, if you look at that and you say, I don't want to be sick for 4 decades. I want to have the vitality of a 30-year-old. Like, if I want all of these things, am I willing to make the commitment of 4 hours a day? So it's an interesting one. And I, you know, for me, I'm the same sort of thing. I probably carve out, you know, up to 2 hours of morning ritual. And what I say to my clients too is, when you stop, you know, working on the foundation piece of the morning ritual, you know, the day you get to that point Sharon was talking about where you're like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, I probably don't need to do this and this and this, is the day you start sliding backwards. And then at some point you realize, hey, I feel different, very different to, you know, what I felt like I have different synchronicities. I'm feeling a little bit of anxiety around this thing. I'm less able to deal with the unknown, the unforeseen, and all of that sort of stuff. I'm a little bit more reactive. All of those sort of things start to become, you know, red flags and indicators for me that, okay, I need to get back in and turn the dial up. So the question I've got for you, Sharon, and for you to riff on a little bit, is difference between rituals in 2019 and then, you know, the rituals through 2020 and 2021. Was there any difference? Did things work back in easy days versus challenging? Like, what's been your experience over the last few years of your rituals?
Yeah, they change. You know, I was used to my lifestyle of spending the winters in Colorado and then the summers in Bali, be back and forth six months. And when that kept a lot of fresh energy in my life, and I took care of myself in different ways in each place and got a lot of rejuvenation being in Bali and in the community that we have there and talking about these things and practicing these things in community and then coming back to Colorado, I don't have quite the same community and the culture is different. You know, we don't sit around and talk about meditation and how we are empowered to heal ourselves. I just don't have that community in Colorado. And so I noticed that, that I got off track for a while in the last couple of years. And I gave away quite a bit of my power and was not in these practices in the same way. And so coming, it was, you know, at the end of last year, the second half of last year, where I got more into the going back into the inner work and having morning thoughts, wake up and read the affirmations of how I want to go throughout my day. This author, I mentioned this to you, the work of Florence Scovel Shen. Yeah. And I came into her work and specifically The Game of Life and How to Play It.
Yeah, classic book.
Yeah. And you just, you know, it's a gift sometimes. Like, I didn't think I realized like how I say off track. I mean, my life is still wonderful, but I could just feel the imbalance and letting go of my power and kind of getting caught up in world events and forgetting that I have the ability to create the energy of each and every day and how I, as you taught me, respond to the world versus react to what's going on. And so, yeah, so getting back into my meditations and into having affirmations and into being with my community, calling the people that I don't get to see every day, but that live this kind of life. And fortunately, John is very much into the same kind of mindset too, my partner. And so we have each other.
Yeah.
So, and so the point of me saying that is that I got off track. It's like, it's okay. Like, it happens sometimes. Yeah. Like, I'm back in it and it feels better than ever. And so these tools are here, and sometimes it's nice to have the contrast in life to know how good it can feel.
What I found was through 2020, 2021 is I just needed to ratchet up the inner work that I was doing. So, you know, if you're in a more destabilized external environment, if you're bumping up against things that are more likely to create a reactive response in you, if you've got less control over your own environment, less autonomy, there's certainly things you need to work on for yourself and upgrade. So I definitely found I need to ratchet up. And I called it radical self-care. So I said, okay, I'm doing some pretty good stuff for myself, but I really need to take it to the next level. If I'm doing, you know, mindfulness work for 45 minutes, I do need to push it out to that 1 hour 15. Like, I need to do these regular things. I did a Joe Dispenza meditation a couple of weeks ago. It was like 2 hours and 40 minutes. Like, it was like a hardcore, and it's like
the center of the magnet.
Yeah. So powerful, powerful one. So again, it's like, you know, doing those things, realizing, you know, one of the things I followed Dr. David Hawkins' work and levels of consciousness, and I've got it on my wall there, levels of consciousness, courage. We want to pass through that point. That's the point, you know, the breakthrough point. I've done podcasts on it before, so just do a search on David Hawkins, Power Versus Force. One of the ones, you know, that's even above courage, neutrality, willingness, acceptance. So this idea of acceptance, so, you know, accepting that it is what it is. Not you don't have to accept, you know, that I'm okay with, like, getting hammered or beaten or told to do this or whatever. It's not accepting of that. It's accepting of this is the experience. How can I be okay with the experience? And from the acceptance of the experience, then what can I choose to do with it? Because when we drop into acceptance, we're more likely to come into that calm state of being. And from that calm state of being, then we can tap into our creative juices and start creating, as Sharon was talking about, the reality that we want to experience. So setting those intentions, you know, at the start of the day, those affirmations, and start creating that reality that we want to experience. But we need to be in the right state. So it's doing those practices that get us in the right state. So I'm going to ask Sharon shortly what the practices are that she does to help her get into that state. One of the things for me has been tapping emotional freedom technique. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll put in the show notes like any modalities that I mention and any ways to sort of access that. There's a great book called The Tapping Solution by Nick Ortner that goes into that in a very sort of pragmatic, practical way. There's another guy, Dawson Church, that goes into EFT in a little bit more detail. So emotional freedom technique, essentially, you know, it's the meridian lines mapped out by the Chinese hundreds of years ago. Who knows how they did that? Awesome that they did. You know, so we're all aware of acupuncture and this idea of putting needles in, influencing energetic pathways, creating physiological responses in the body. It's not woo-woo. You know, medical science in the Western world has accepted. They'll, you know, pay insurance claims if people decide to use it. So it's an accepted practice. Somewhere along the line, someone realised that if you tap on some of these acupuncture points, the kinetic effect of tapping on it creates this electrical impulse on the fascia of the muscle, so the sheath around the muscle. So that creates this electrical pulse, which creates a similar sort of effect of acupuncture. And you can do it on yourself. You don't need any tools. You don't need to understand acupuncture. So there's different points. And in this book, The Tapping Solution, Nick Ortner talks about 8 specific points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, collarbone, brow line, crown of the head. So going through these things, and there's a certain technique to, you know, kick it off, and he goes through in his book about the process. You tap on, first you work out what you're going to work on, maybe your anger, you've got an anger issue, or you've got, you know, frustration. You'd grade that on a scale of 1 to 10, I come about a 9, just so you've got a marker to work with. Then you're tapping on this acupressure point, karate chop point, on your hand, and as you're tapping on that, you're saying, even though I'm feeling angry, I love and approve of myself. And you can be a little bit more elaborate. You can say, even though I'm so angry at someone saying this and doing this to me, I love and approve of myself. And you do that 3 times. That sort of sets the intention. But what that does too is it's saying, I acknowledge I'm feeling an experience, and regardless of whether I'm feeling this experience, this emotion, I'm still okay. I still love myself. Even though I'm angry, even though I'm frustrated, even though I'm sad, even though I'm jealous, even though I'm in a fit of rage, even though I'm apathetic, whatever it is, it's saying I'm having this emotional experience. And even though I'm having this emotional experience, I can still love and approve of myself in that moment. And then you start tapping on these points. And again, I think I've got podcasts on it. If I haven't got a podcast on it, I'll put a link down in the show notes to an example of me talking through this. You can download something from me, or I'll send you off to someone else to get some work in this. So it's one of the tools that I use, and the idea of it is, you know, when I tap on this, I start to influence the activation of the amygdala, which is the part in the midbrain that fires off the stress response. So if I can deactivate that, I can sort of cool down my nervous system. I can, you know, bring that autonomic nervous system back to a balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And from within that space, then maybe I can drop deeper into that meditation. Because there might be times I'm like too agitated in mind to drop into a meditation. So I'm like, okay, let me see what tools I've got. So that's one of the tools, emotional freedom technique, that allows me sometimes to prepare myself to go into a deeper meditation. What tools do you use, Sharon?
Yeah, I really like EFT for that reason. And another reason is because sometimes there's something that wants to be expressed, right? And as we know from Dr. Hawkins' work, is expression can be a way of covering up actually being with the emotion and processing the emotion if we're just venting or yelling at someone or taking it out. But if there's something we want to talk through, doing it while doing the EFT practice is actually releasing that, is actually processing it. And so it's a nice way when somebody really wants to talk or when I really want to talk, of letting the words come out, but not doing it in a way that is just re-ingraining those neural pathways. Yeah. And so there's many reasons why I like EFT, and that's one of them. Another tool that I really use mostly is the Sedona method, which is another way of releasing at the emotional level. And it's related to the work of Dr. David Hawkins. I think Lester Levinson, the founder of the Sedona method, and David Hawkins were in the same era and were in the same, knew of each other. And so I find similarities in their teachings. The book David Hawkins wrote called Letting Go, we often talk about Sedona method as letting go, releasing, allowing, welcoming. Those are all kind of casual synonyms for the Sedona method process. And the idea with this work is that when the thoughts that we have and the beliefs and the actions and the problems and the patterns, there's thousands of those. If we try to go address things at the thought level, like this thought is really, you know, throwing me off course, and then we'll come up with another one. All of that stuff is related to just a handful of 9 emotions in the Sedona method. And I think that David Hawkins has maybe 12 or something, but there's a limited set of emotions. And if we get to that level, the emotional level, and we release at that level, we're releasing across the board in our lives, we're releasing patterns, not just solving one problem at a time. And so I love efficiencies in tools. and so that's one of the things that I found. Yeah. But the Sedona method. And another thing that's wonderful about it is that talk therapy is not required. Don't need to get into someone's story. Yeah. And we can just, it can be for privacy reasons, and it's also time saver to not have to hear the whole backstory in order to help someone feel free and feel better about whatever it is that they're dealing with in life. So I like it because of that. And it's magical. Yeah. People have this experience where we might be releasing something about work, and they'll find that their personal life, their primary relationships, have just magically, they get along with their partner better, or this, their mother who they've had 40 years of struggle with. And you know what? Like, I actually found her really pleasant this weekend when we were together, and that's never happened before. And that stuff happens all the time. Yeah. And it's a really simple tool, and it's surprising how well it works when everybody, the first time, they're like, we just talked about my feelings and I felt them and let them go. Yeah.
And that's something you do on yourself, and you do it with your clients as well.
Yes. And that's another thing I love about using it in coaching, is that through the repetition process and the clients getting to experiencing it over and over again, after a few weeks, they go, you know what? I was in a meeting, this person got to me, and while nobody knew what I was doing, I was coaching myself through the releasing process, and I was able to stay engaged and stay calm in that meeting. Yes, exactly. It's simple, and you can use it yourself.
That's a beautiful thing too. And I like the idea if we have this toolkit you know, off our hip, and we keep adding these different tools. And we're like, okay, I've got this going on. What's the best tool for this? Is it an EFT thing, a tapping thing? Is it a Sedona method? Is it a meditation thing? Is it a grounding? I need to go and stand on earth and earth myself. Do I need to spend some time in nature? Do I need to feel some sunshine on my body, re-engage with the idea that Mother Nature's not had any fit over the last 2 years, like completely ineffective? Do I need to go and pat my dog? Because my dog, again, is not bothered by anything. Like, okay, bring me back into this eternal present moment. So, you know, all of those things. So let's continue to add to the list of things. So, so David Goulet talked about Octavio, my colleague's, his teacher, Ekadasi. So it's a traditional tantric hatha practice, really intentional, and I was going to say intense. Yes, it is intense. Breath work, and it goes over sort of 11 days, and you keep building on it over these 11 days. Like, again, practices like that, and it's designed to just, you know, shake the absolute crapola out of the autonomic nervous system. So I take my clients through that, and I recently took a client through it, and she's just gone. Just one of the hardest things she's ever done in her life. And I've taken an athlete client of mine, you know, triathlons and all that sort of stuff, and he's like, that totally kicked my ass, like that thing. So there's those tools around, so finding good teachers who can take us through those practices. Recent one, Wim Hof. What have you had exposure to Wim Hof method? Do you do Wim Hof method? It's a great one, because he again has, you know, jumped in the laboratory and had people prick him and poke him and inject bad stuff into him, and 16,000 people have this reaction. He individually has a different reaction. Then it's like, can that be replicated? He says, you know, give me a handful of people, I'll teach them up in my method. We'll come back, jump back in the lab. You can squirt those crew up with the same stuff you squirted with me, see whether they're the same as 16,000. No, they're not. They have the same effect. So, again, a lot of scientific research behind Wim Hof method. So I really like it for that. And, you know, this breath work thing. So what's been your exposure to it, and what's your thought on the Wim Hof?
Yeah, I got quite curious about his work and him a few years ago, and I actually did a Wim Hof workshop at the practice.
Classic.
And it was great. So my body had this condition at the time called Raynaud's, where it's a circulation issue. The body can get when it gets cold exposure, and cold doesn't have to be that cold. The body will withdraw the blood from the extremities, and then they get painfully cold. And there's other things that go along with that. But people with Raynaud's are not supposed to do, I think, this cold exposure thing. But I thought that it could heal me, so I decided to do it anyway. And I, like, mind over matter kind of thing. And so did the whole ice bath plunge and everything. And then I tried to keep up with the showers and that kind of stuff. But it's one of those practices, I really believe in it, but I didn't stick with it.
That cold exposure, particularly, like, I live in Bali, so trying to get cold exposure by turning the shower on, it doesn't exist. But I imagine where you are, when you go cold shower for a couple of minutes, it's actually at a temperature where it's actually starting to do things for the immune system, for sure.
Yeah, I had this idea because, you know, living in Colorado in the mountains in the wintertime, there's a frozen stream behind our house. And even in the summertime, it's just above freezing. It's not very, so I had this idea of, oh, I'm going to practice this cold exposure thing in Bali. And I have a few more months of Bali. By the time I get back to Colorado, I'm going to be jumping in that stream every morning. That hasn't happened yet, but it's something it could still happen. But one of the practices in there, the breathwork practice, was incredible.
Yeah.
We were doing that before and, at this Cancun retreat with Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's got a new breath new to me, that he's been doing. And it reminded me of that breath we did during Wim Hof. And it invigorates my brain in this way that I can feel like there's electricity firing in there. And I really enjoy that part. So I've been thinking again about Wim Hof. Also, I enjoy his writings and his talkings and his teaching. I enjoy him as a person. I think he's...
Yeah. Oh, I think he's a phenomenal human being doing amazing stuff. You know, and he's copped ridicule through his earlier life where people just thought he was a nut job. But, you know, he's like, you know, he's making a significant change in millions of people's of lives. So I think, you know, and, you know, I just downloaded his app because I'm going to start getting, you know, some of my clients do it's like 17 or 20 minutes or whatever. So I've started doing it from the start of the start of February. So what are we, 28th of February today? So, you know, I've been doing it now for about 4 weeks every day, and I'll just do, whether it's, you know, 3 rounds, 5 rounds or whatever, breath work, definitely less inflammation. You know, and he will talk about that's one of the things, you know, people with arthritis and different things. But if you lower your inflammation of your body, so if you start, you know, turning your blood work into more alkaline and getting it out of an acid state, like, and reducing inflammation, like, that's going to affect things, you know, whether it's joint pain, whether it's, you know, inflammation at the stomach, whether it's stomach issues, like, anywhere in the body, if you're reducing inflammation, even at the brain, like, at the brain level, if you can reduce inflammation in your body, you're definitely, you know, healing your body and taking it into that place and space of optimum health and reducing the workload on the body, which is constantly dealing with that, you know, elevated inflammation. So I'm a huge fan of it. And I think, again, you know, bringing that practice in, if it's 17 to 20 minutes, and, you know, this is Joe Dispenza in his early days, didn't have as much breath work in there, but, you know, Sharon's saying, like, his later stuff, he's like, you know, really getting into breath. So I really think, you know, and this has been the traditional teaching in yoga. It's you do asana, physical movement to, you know, start recalibrating between left and right hemisphere of the brain, bring you back into a state ready to do the meditation work. You do the asana, you lie down in shavasana, the autonomic nervous system starts reorganizing itself. Then you do some pranayama, some breath work, and then you go into meditation. You know, that's the pathway of true classic yoga, the kind that's figured out over the last few thousand years of the optimum benefits of it. It's got off path as it hits the Western world and it becomes, you know, a yoga class where the aim is to sweat and bust Insta-worthy moves and all that sort of stuff. True classical yoga is we do a bit of movement to, like, you know, align ourselves, to prepare ourselves. We go into shavasana. We reorganize ourselves, we do this breath work, you know, whether that's a Wim Hof type breath work, whether that's some of the yogic teaching breath work, and that, you know, presents the state for our meditation. So Joe Dispenza, you know, his longer meditations, they all start with breath work, you know, 10 minutes of breath work, you know, and doing these breath holds, like doing these, you know, visualizations, but beyond visualization where you can actually sort of sense, see, experience energy moving up, you know, going up in the yoga, it's a Shushumni path or whatever, you know, taking it up into the mid part of the brain and holding your attention at the top of the brain. So where the attention goes, energy flows, that sort of thing. So what have you got to add to that conversation, Pete?
Well, another thing that I have found really useful is the work of Eileen McCusick. She's a researcher out of Vermont, and she developed something called biofield tuning. And yes, this is one of her tuning forks. This is called the Sonic Slider.
Yep.
And this is resonates at the 12th harmonic of the Schumann resonance, which is the vibration of the earth. Yes. And so what this does is you activate it like this, and then you can put it on your body, and it brings the vibration into your body. So you can use it on a space where there's feeling of like stuffness, tightness, pain. If you have some sort of like thyroid issue, you can use it in that area. It helps restore the body, restore the proteins like collagen. So she's been using it on her face and areas to help heal various conditions or aging. So, but I find, especially when my mind's not believing that I can just heal things through the power of thought or energetically, it's nice to have a physical tool too.
Because
feeling the vibrations is reminding my body you're receiving something to help you come back into balance.
Classic. And I mean, that works on that principle of the big grandfather clock in the shop with all the traditional, you know, TikTok clocks. That will then train the rest of the clock so that will come into vibrational frequency to match that. So if this tune is like at the right harmonic and starts reorganizing those parts of the body which are out of coherence with, you know, the right frequency for healing. Love it.
Yes, she's got a whole collection of tuning forks, some that can be used on the body and some that are audible and used in the field. And she teaches you how to use them. And then she also has trained healers that will conduct sessions on your own energy field, your own biofield.
I'm just looking at my list of different things and I'm looking at time and that sort of stuff. There's so many more things.
Oh my gosh,
what I'm thinking is we might have a part two in a couple of months' time.
Okay.
To look at a few different things and, you know, as we revisit, oh, I forgot to talk about this particular thing, because I could talk about sound healing stuff. I could talk about water fasting. I could talk about intermittent fasting. So some of those other things. The other one I wanted to drop in there is like David Goulet, who I've spoken about. Like he taught this, I just call it powering up the field. So it's like this breathing, it's called a yoga kriya. It becomes a kriya when it goes from just doing breath work to actually doing it's beyond visualizing, because you're actually sensing, feeling, experiencing energy moving through your body. So it's like it's doing particular things. You might then sense particular things, and then you might sort of actually experience energy. So there's, you know, a part of it where you're imagining energy is moving around your heart chakra. So, you know, you're in there and you're actually feeling, sensing, experiencing this subtle energy moving around the body. Because, you know, when we get down to it, we're 99.9999999% you know, non-physical matter. So we're mostly energy, information, and frequency. So if we can start doing these practices, and that's the yogic practices, let's start into influencing stuff at a deeply subtle level. So I did a practice that, you know, took me about 30 days to build up to, and then I sort of did it for 9 months straight every day. And I think it was one of the things that allowed me to have a lot of mental clarity and stability during 2021, when things are a bit crapolas and that sort of thing. So again, these practices at a deeper level. And the idea was to create this, you know, torus field of energy, this coherent torus field of energy around our body to create more coherence, better communication between left and right hemisphere of the brain, you know, just this thing being reorganized. And as, you know, Joe Dispenza uses that Einstein saying about the field influences the particle. So when we bring our electromagnetic field into coherence, it starts reorganizing things at a physical matter level. So that's why this work, this inner work, this more subtle work is so effective, because it's working on the root of things. It's working on the field, reorganizing that field, and then letting the biochemistry happen around it or be influenced by the field and the communication that's happening at that quantum level. I could definitely talk under wet concrete. We all know that already, but this conversation about these. So I guess for those that are listening, so I just want to reiterate some of the modalities that came up in this conversation that I encourage you to check out. Obviously, Joe Dispenza's work, both Sharon and I agree that You Are the Placebo is the best book to just get a sense of what's actually possible once we influence this placebo and belief. And, you know, that's in alignment with Bruce Lipton's work, you know, the biology of belief. So there's a lot of stuff around belief, and it's been one of my principal teachings and where I've got some of the biggest results with my clients. So I've talked about tapping, both Sharon and I, tapping, or it's called emotional freedom technique is the formal terminology for it. There's another method I didn't get to talk about, we'll talk about in part two, Wim Hof method. So again, I just finished reading Wim Hof method, his latest book. I didn't realise he'd learnt Sanskrit so he could read all of the yogic texts, because I wasn't sure how in alignment he was with the yogic teachings. He's all over that stuff, but he tapped into Mother Nature to teach him, like, this breath work. Like, he dropped himself in the ice to, like, you know, what's my body telling me in its relationship with Mother Nature? So, again, I'm a huge fan of his for all the reasons of, you know, he's drawing this information from traditionally, he's drawing this information from his connection with nature rather than, you know, trying to science lab it up. He spent, you know, 20 years in his own science laboratory, him and Mother Nature, you know, coming up with this stuff. And, you know, he's again got enough proof to support it. I've talked about different practices from some of these yogic teachers that have, you know, taught this deeper stuff. David Goulet, his work, and I'll put some links to, you know, his stuff, you know, once the world opens up and it's easy to travel. You know, if you've spent some time with David Goulet in, you know, pyramid yoga in Thailand, you're doing some awesome stuff. Particularly, I would say that if I had a major, major illness happening, I would make my way over to Thailand and I'd leopard crawl my way into pyramid yoga with David Goulet, and I'd do the work with him. He does sound healing work. He does some plant medicine type stuff. Like, you know, this guy, he's into quantum physics as well, so he's all over Joe Dispenza. Like, he's a legend.
I often think about him and, like, the idea of health, like you were saying. He's one person that comes to mind often when I think about, like, I feel pretty good, but I think it can get, I want to see how much better it can get. And I just, I met him once, spent a few days with him at the practice and one of his workshops that he did there. And just, like you said, in his 70s and one of the most vibrant, the way he moves, the way he thinks, the way he expresses is so young, so vibrant, and he's full of vitality. And that's the image of what I hold for myself. And one of the reasons that I'm so into all of these practices and this is my life, because I see what's possible in someone like David.
And Goulet. Like, you know, this whole Corona show came along, like, not one iota of bother, you know, this guy's not bothered. And I imagine, like, Wim Hof, he's just no bother, no how to maintain and manage, fortify, elevate their immune system, like, real, like, that's just not in their conversation space. Like, it's just, oh, that, like, that's just, it's just like a little blip on the radar. So we talked about Dr. David Hawkins, and I'm glad you mentioned Letting Go. So that book, Power Versus Force, is his seminal book, and I get, you know, all my clients to read that. And then, you know, if we've got space for it, then we go into the Letting Go book and, you know, getting into this idea of getting beyond the mind chatter and, like, dipping into a deeper level and surrendering at that level. And this, all this stuff falls over because it doesn't have any foundation piece. So I love that. Talked about the Sedona method, and I'll talk to you offline to make sure I've got the best link to find, you know, whether it's linking up with you for someone to find out more about that, or the Sedona method. I imagine they've got a website and a book or something like that. Biofield tuning, again, I'll get the link off you for that thing. That sounds pretty awesome, and I'm interested in getting one of those Duvalakis, because, again, I think that might be a conversation piece in our part two. Start talking about electromagnetic frequency and what we can do to fortify ourselves against that and tapping back into those natural harmonics. What's the terminology for the Earth's harmonics?
The Schumann resonance.
The Schumann resonance. So, you know, a conversation more about how we can tap into that. And I've read some experiments around people getting removed from exposure to that Earth frequency and seriously messes them up. So
yeah.
And the other one was the book by what's the author's name again?
Florence Scovel Shin.
Yeah,
that one.
Game of Life and How to Play It.
Yeah, and this is actually her complete works. Yeah, it's her four books. From she published the first one in 1925.
So I'm excited. I think we've shared some good little things, and people can start mm-hmm. having a look at some of those. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share a link to listen to Joe Dispenza's morning meditation, so people can get exposed to that. In part two, I'm going to talk about some other technology, some sound technologies in the space, the meditation mindfulness space. So I'll share some of those because I've had some, you know, pretty decent results with some of that work as well. So thank you so much for joining me, Sharon, for this conversation. I know I speak most of it, you know, just jump in if you ever need to interrupt me when I'm off in my tangents or whatever. So let's plan on in a couple of months' time coming back into this conversation, having a part two, filling any gaps of, you know, techniques. I'm going to talk about this one. Can you see that? It's called the emotion yes. code. So I'm going to yes. bring that one up. We're going to talk magnets. So there's more stuff to come in part two. So do keep an eye out for part two.
Oh, yeah. I have more too.
Yeah.
So many things to experiment.
Now we know what we want to talk about, what we want to add into it. We'll bring all of our tools. We'll empty out the toolkit and like we'll see, oh, there's this other one over here that I didn't mention.
Yeah, and if any of your listeners have questions about anything you talked about this time, we can address that in the next one too.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect idea, so for sure. So I'm going to have the links in the show notes. For those of you listening to this, if this resonates for you and if you think you know someone who could benefit from learning some of these inner tools and, like, you know, having a dabble around with them and getting a little bit of exposure from us talking about these things, do pass it on and do share that. For me, it's really about doing this inner work, and when we change our internal experience, the universe bends itself around us in different ways, and we're likely to experience more synchronicities. You know, work is going to be a little bit easier for us. We're going to have to do less, you know, crunching marketing work. And, you know, we're going to have some of those synchronicities, and you're like, whoa, that just saved me like 10 hours of, you know, crunching through this marketing thing. So, again, this idea of how can we attune ourselves so we become more attuned with life, and then life is able to more easily, you know, bring those synchronicities into our life. And again, we might talk about in part two, you know, bringing ourselves into alignment with our divine and inner spark as well. So we might sort of branch off in that space in our conversation. So plenty more awesome stuff to come. So again, thanks so much, Sharon, for joining me here for this conversation.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Conversation already.
Me too.
Getting pumped about that. thank you so much for everyone that's joined us for this conversation. And again, I'll have contact details to reach out to Sharon. I'll have her. So, what's the best website for people to find you? It's SharonKavanaugh.com.
SharonKavanaugh.com. That's CAVANAUGH.
Okay. And I'll have that down in the show notes. So just click on that and you'll be able to see Sharon and Sharon's work. And obviously Sharon's based over in the United States, which is good. You know, I find it hard working with clients over in the US because of time zones and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sharon's in a similar space to me doing similar work. So if you need some coaching support, don't hesitate to reach out in.
Oh, thank you.
Particularly if you're in that sort of America's time zone, perfect to connect up with Sharon. So, again, Sharon, thank you so much for your time, your energy, and sharing those resources, those practical tips, tools, and strategies for my listeners of the Life Masterclass podcast series. So have a fantastic day wherever you are on this beautiful, incredible, gorgeous planet of ours. All the very best. And take care.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Carl.